My name is Justin. I get to be one of the pastors here, and today we get to continue through our series, Building Margin. And I want to let you know that selfishly, I love this series because this idea of making room for what really matters is something that I need to work on in my life. And so as we've been going over it the past couple weeks and for the weeks to come, I'm really looking forward to see where this takes us. And here's why I need to build margin, because I'm like many of you, and that I like to cram my schedule as packed as it possibly can be. And I don't do it for recognition. I don't do it because I think it's going to be celebrated. I do it because I value productivity. If I can get as much as I possibly can get done, then I look at my calendar, and when every single bit of it is booked, I feel like I've had success. Wrongly, I feel like that. But that's the way that my mind works. I'm all about getting things done. And if you are not, then you and me probably aren't going to get along that well, because I like to get things done and you're going to prevent me from making that happen. I'm the type of person where when I am in between meetings or in between appointments, when I am driving from one place to the other, I am trying to listen to either a podcast or a book because I still want to make sure that I'm learning, but I can't just read or listen to it normal pace. It's going to be 1.5 to 2 times speed. So that way I can get it in as quick as I possibly can. If they could download it into my brain, I'm there. Like, that's where I want to be. But I need to build margin, because I can't keep going from one thing right to the next, right to the next. And so what happens, like many of you, I'm sure, is I get to this point where I get stressed out. I start asking questions. I start talking to God, and I say, God, how am I supposed to get through this? God, what is going to help me through this? Why am I so stressed right now? What is going on? You know, when I ask those questions, I'm often received by this question back from God, that, hey, haven't I built this margin in your life for you? And when I receive that back, I'm just shocked. What are you talking about? No, I don't have it. And I'm reminded that God did build margin in our life. He did it in the way of the Sabbath. That's where we're going to be focused on today. So we're going to go to Mark 2 together. We're going to look at two different stories about the Sabbath. And here's the first one. This is one day as Jesus was walking through some grain fields. His disciples began breaking off heads of grain to eat. Now, these weren't their fields. These were fields that they were just walking through. It says, but the Pharisees who were watching, they said to Jesus, look, why are they breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath? Now, what you need to know is that the law actually permitted travelers and people who were journeying to walk through other people's property and harvest some grain, you know, pick some grain to eat or pick a piece of fruit or whatever it is to meet your needs of hunger as you were traveling. That was totally okay by the law. But where the Pharisees are stuck here is that, hey, you weren't hungry on just any day. You were hungry on the Sabbath. And for the Pharisees, that's a problem. And so, let's ask this question. What is the Sabbath? In its simplest terms, the Sabbath is rest. It's an intentional recharge. It's margin that was built by God. And here's what I want you to catch, is that when we talk about Sabbath rest, we're not talking about recouping from the previous week, but instead recharging for the coming week. See, so often what we do is we have a really hard week, a week where our calendar was just full, and what do? We crash. We take that time to rest just so that we get past all the stress and all the tension from the previous week. And we try and recoup that week in that time of rest. But a Sabbath rest is so different. Because the Sabbath rest prepares you for the coming week. It gets you ready. Because you know when you crash, when you have that time where you're recouping, what happens when you go to bed that night? You are already worried about the coming week. You are already stressed out about it. And you start playing out scenarios in your mind. Or maybe you wake up the next morning and you just say, I'm not ready. I can't do another Monday. I think I'm just going to quit my job. When you recharge, when you have that Sabbath rest, you are ready for the coming week. You are ready for whatever gets thrown at you because you've had such a good, rejuvenating time off, time away, time resting, that you're just ready. So here the story continues. It says, Jesus said to them, haven't you ever read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. So Jesus takes this idea of the Sabbath and he compares it back to this story in 1 Samuel 21. And what happens is David is and his friends are hungry. So they go into the temple and they don't just break into the temple and steal the bread, but they go into this temple and David says to the priest, "Hey, me and my friends are hungry. Do you have anything to eat?" And the priest says, "No, we don't have anything to eat. The only thing that we have are these sacred loaves, these loaves that are not for you. They're set apart," right? And so this is where Jesus is making that connection, because the Sabbath is supposed to be a day that's set apart. The priest says, "These loaves are set apart. They are only for the priests." But then the priest has compassion. He has mercy. He says, "I understand the law. I know the law. I know what it says. But I also know that you're hungry. I know that your friends are hungry. And so I'm not going to sit here and see this pile of bread sitting right here and say that you can't have anything to eat when you have hunger." So that brings us to our next question. If we know what the Sabbath is, why do we observe it? Why do we observe it, and why should we observe it, if apparently there can be compassion and mercy built into it? And Jesus answers that in this next verse. He says, "The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath." He says that each and every one of us has this innate need inside of us for rest. Whether we like it or not, whether you're like me and you just want to be productive all the time or not, you have this need for rest. And the Sabbath is there to meet it. Just like each and every one of us has a need for food and nourishment. And so Jesus refers back to that story, because what happens when we become hungry? We get stomach pains, we get grouchy, we get moody, we don't have as much energy as we normally need, and we meet that need with food. Jesus says the Sabbath was meant to meet the needs that we as people have. We all have the need for rest. So God gave us the Sabbath. And then look at how he turns this. He says it was not made for people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. And this is where this idea of margin comes in. Because so many times we make the Sabbath, we make this idea of a Sabbath day another requirement, another check on the checklist, another note on our schedule that we are just waiting to cross off. And Jesus is saying, that's not the purpose of it. It's not so that way you can learn another law and all the complexities that come along with it. And when you figure that out, you can just cross it out and you can move on. He says, that would be you trying to meet the needs of the Sabbath. He says, that's not how it was made. It was made to meet this need that you and I both have. So Jesus is pointing back to the heart behind the law. And oftentimes we miss that heart. He continues, he says, "The Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath." Jesus is professing his lordship. You know, Hudson Taylor, who was a missionary to China, he's quoted as saying, "Either Christ is Lord of all or he's not Lord at all." That you need to be able to completely trust your life, every aspect of your life, to Jesus. Jesus is saying the same thing right here. He says, "I am the Lord even over your rest, even over the way that you rest." You need to remember what God would want from it, not what the checklist says. See, what happens when we're only concerned about the checklist is we start to become legalistic. Here's what legalism is. It's an excessive adherence to law, rule, schedule, or formula. Make sure you pay attention to that idea, an excessive adherence. See, sometimes we see this play out in the church, but it's not always about spiritual things. We can be legalistic in all areas of our lives. For some of you, you don't like to go over the speed limit. I don't understand that. I like to go over every once in a while, right? But some of you do. You don't. But it would be legalistic to say, "I'm not going to even go 10 under because I don't want to even approach that speed line. I don't want anyone to think that I even came close to it." That would be legalistic. Kids, students, Some of you become legalistic with your homework because you're going through your homework and you get to that one question that you can't figure out the answer to. And what do? You just get stuck on it and you just stay there and you just let it build up tension and anxiety inside of you. And you can't possibly go to bed until you finish off every last question on that homework. Instead of being able to just go into school the next day and saying, "Hey, teacher, I didn't understand this. I didn't know how to answer. I didn't know the answer." And then we do it with our hobbies too, right? We want to pick up a new hobby. We want to get into photography and we say, "Hey, I want to be a great photographer, but I'm not going to take a single picture until I have the best possible camera." We do this in our hobbies all the time. We wait for the best gear, for the best equipment, for the best whatever it can be, and we hold off until we can actually have that before we actually pursue that endeavor. That would be legalistic. And what we have to be so careful of is that legalism is so, so dangerous. We have to be so cautious that we don't fall into this, because here's what we see, that legalism expresses itself in two ways. Now, there's a lot more ways that it expresses itself, but here are two ways that I want to focus on. The first is a lack of compassion. That all you see is the problem. All you see is where someone else or yourself comes up short. And so someone didn't do something right, whether it was yourself or somebody else, and all you see is that they didn't do it right. You didn't see that they were trying. You didn't see that they put an effort out. You didn't see that they're still learning. You didn't see that they just didn't even understand and they didn't know any better. You don't care because you have a lack of compassion when you fall into this trap of legalism. You lose all compassion because all that matters is that things get done and that they get done right. Then we see a judgmental spirit. Let me bring this back to margin. That when we lack margin in our lives, we begin to judge people who have it. When we lack that margin in our lives, we start to judge the others that we see that do have margin in their lives. So when we look at their schedule compared to ours, and we see that they're going on vacations and that they're taking time off and they're spending time with their family, we say that's because they don't know how to really work hard. They don't know what a real workload is like. They don't understand what it's like to have to work a job like mine. We start to judge those people. We bring it into our relationships and we say, "Oh, well, the perfect person just fell right there before them. They're so lucky." It's not because they actually work at their relationship. It's not because they actually communicate between the two of them. But we see the margin that they have in their relationships as pure luck. That they just happen to bump into the right person at the right time. We do it with our finances. That if we see someone is doing well off, we say, "Oh, that's just because daddy got them that job. It's just because they knew the right person at the right time and they just fell into this great place. They're just living off of what their parents or their grandparents were able to give them." When we lack margin, we start to judge people who have it. That's a dangerous road down towards legalism. And here's what I want you to see, that both of these show up in this next story about the Sabbath. It says Jesus went into the synagogue again, and he noticed a man with a deformed hand. And since it was the Sabbath, the enemies of Jesus watched him closely. There's that judgmental spirit. Just waiting for Jesus to do something that they would consider wrong. Just waiting for Jesus to do something outside of the normal. Just waiting for Jesus to do something that's going to bend that law or go in opposition to what they perceive that law is. Let's remember that they have lost the heart behind the law. But they are waiting. They are ready to judge as soon as they possibly can. And then it says, if he healed the man's hand, because the Pharisees plan to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. And there's that lack of compassion. That they were so concerned about that Jesus actually didn't lift a finger on the Sabbath, that they don't care about this man's deformed hand anymore. They don't care that it's probably ruining his life up to this point. They don't care that it could cause him pain and discomfort. They don't care about any of it. All they care about is, did Jesus lift a finger on the Sabbath? Remember, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of the people. This man needs healing. Jesus is trying to provide that. The Pharisees have totally lost sight. The story continues. It says, Jesus said to the man with the deformed hand, come and stand in front of everyone. Then he turned to his critics and asked, does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath, or is it a day for doing evil? Jesus says that your legalism has brought it to this point, that it's either about doing good things on the Sabbath or doing evil. He says, you're not allowing any in between. That the fact that I can't possibly do good, you're forcing me to neglect this person. You're forcing me to do evil here. He says, is this a day to save life or to destroy it? And then we see that his critics finally maybe start to wisen up a little bit, and they refuse to even answer that question. Because they know that they've fallen into this trap. But again, remember, their hearts have lost sight. And we see that in this next verse. It says, he looked around at them angrily. He was deeply saddened by their hard hearts. So what I want you to catch, that so much of our legalism, so much of our lack of margin, comes from confusion of the heartbeat behind what God intended for us. Because we fall into that checklist, into that schedule, into just getting things done so that we say we did them. But the heart behind the Sabbath was to meet your need and my need. That's exactly what Jesus did. He said to the man, hold out your hand. The man held out his hand and it was restored. Jesus met the needs of this man. So we've looked at what the Sabbath is. We've talked about why we should have it. But here's the question. How do you Sabbath? How do we actually go about keeping the Sabbath? And I want to refer you to this book, The Emotionally Healthy Leader by Peter Scazzaro. And don't get thrown by that word leader, because each and every one of us leads in more ways than we know. Each and every one of us has the potential to be a leader, and you probably lead people that you don't even realize that you're leading. So please don't see that word and say, no, I'm checked out, it's not about me. This is for each and every one of us. But in this book, Peter Scazzaro points out that a Sabbath, if we're going to have a healthy Sabbath and observe it in a healthy way, that we are going to reserve a 24-hour time period. And then he points out four foundations of what a Sabbath looks like. So what I want to do is walk through those with you. The first is that you stop work. Pharisees didn't disagree with that one. They took it to the extreme. But that you need to stop work. See, and I get what this is like, because I know how hard it is for us to stop work sometimes. I know how much you don't want to. Some of you are like me and you even like your job, and so you want to bring it home with you. I'm checking my email and my texts all the time, and sometimes I just need to get to that point that I just need to stop, and I need to leave work at work. Lindsay and I both work here at the church. So a huge portion of our lives revolves around the same thing. Sometimes when we're having discussions and conversations, we need to just say, hey, you know what? That's work. We're going to stop talking about that right now. We need to do our best to stop work. That also means that we need to not take our work that isn't necessarily our occupation and pile it all into our day of Sabbath rest. Let me give you an example. I hate yard work. I can't stand it. Some of you guys like mowing the grass. I don't understand that at all. It might smell good, but it's still terrible to do. I don't understand it. And I can't stand, like, I just don't like doing it. So I don't do yard work on my Sabbath. I will do it in the dark on another night, on another day, to make sure that it's not a part of my Sabbath, because it doesn't bring me rest. It prevents me from resting. Now, some of you are parents. There's some work that we just can't stop. There's some work that people depend on us for. And that's why we talked about where the Pharisees were, this idea of legalism, this excessive adherence. No one is asking you to stop parenting your kids. But you need to be able to take a look at your day and say, where can I stop work? How can I stop bringing work back home with me? After we stop, we're going to enjoy rest. We're going to take time and just enjoy rest. I like to do that. I like to sit on my front porch and watch cars go by. I like to go down to Beavertail and watch the waves crash on the rocks. Maybe you like to go to the beach. Maybe you like to curl up on the couch and watch your favorite TV show or movie. You need to enjoy rest. But be careful here, because remember we talked about recouping versus recharging? Rest is not the whole thing that you're doing. So it's not about crashing. It's not about having that hard, hard week and then crashing for the entire day and that entire Sabbath time to try and recoup the previous week. It's about enjoying that rest. For some of you, it's napping. You know, I'm not a napper. I never take naps. Last Sunday, I took a nap. You nap people are pretty smart. That's so good. It's enjoyable. I understand that. That's a way that you can enjoy rest. But it's not about just resting. So we're going to stop. We're going to rest. And then we're going to practice delight. You, on your Sabbath time, on your Sabbath rest, you're going to do something that you enjoy doing. I love to go out kayaking. I can do that on my Sabbath. Maybe you like to go for a hike or go for a run. You can do that on your Sabbath. Maybe you enjoy going out and trying new restaurants with your spouse. Go do that on your Sabbath. Practice delight on your Sabbath. Can I tell you, a couple years ago, Lindsay and I, we took a vacation, and we didn't go anywhere. We just did day trips each day for a little over a week. And every day we had something planned out. We did a lot on that vacation. But we made sure to practice delight. See, we set these guidelines that, hey, as soon as one of our kids starts to get exhausted or cranky or hungry, we're just going to stop what we're doing. Even if we are in the heightened moment of fun, we're going to stop. Because we want to make sure that we leave at this point of delight. So many times when we are practicing delight, we like to squeeze every last ounce out of that delight. We like to squeeze every second that we possibly can. And what happens is we start to go back on that downhill. And then that delight starts to turn into stress. And it starts to turn into crying and yelling. You guys know what this is like, especially if you have kids. You get that when we push the light too far, you have to be able to stop while you're still enjoying it. And then you know what you do? You pick up on your next Sabbath rest, exactly where you left off. But we need to stop, rest, delight, and then finally, we need to contemplate God. We need to take intentional time on our Sabbath to stop and just talk with God, to just dig into His Word. While we're resting, while I'm looking at those waves crash, to just enjoy God's design and what He did, to actually be thinking through that. While we're practicing delight and you're on that hike, to admire God's creation. But that you are contemplating God. That you have that time set apart with Him. And here's the struggle. Here's what we do too often. Is that we pull maybe just this idea of contemplating God. And we say, hey, I went to church on Sunday. I contemplated God. And see, here's where we start to go down that dangerous path of legalism a little bit. Because now we've turned our Sabbath back into that checklist. That I showed up at church on Sunday and I had my Sabbath rest. It's not about that check mark. It's about the rest that you need and about God meeting that need for you. Here's why. Because God's intent was margin. That's why He built it in the form of the Sabbath. God's intent, His desire for you and I, was margin. God took margin during creation. He worked for 6 days and then He rested. And then early in the scriptures, we see that He sets the foundation of the Sabbath. Because he cares for you. He understands how much stress you carry, how much work you do, and he knows that you need that rest. And see, what happens is when we start to make this about that checklist, about that schedule, when we start to get legalistic, legalistic robs margin. Legalism robs margin. But God's design for margin was that we would have freedom in our lives, that we would live it to the absolute fullest, that we would be able to experience life the way that God had intended it for us. So we have to get into that practice of a Sabbath. We have to actually observe and experience that Sabbath rest. So here's what I want to do. I want to walk through two next steps with you. They're really simple. Everyone take out your connection card. We'll walk through these together. But they're both around this Sabbath day. The first is maybe you don't have a Sabbath. And so you're going to say, I need to set aside a Sabbath day in my week to allow me to receive the margin that God wants me to have. Would you set aside that time period to make sure that you can actually have that kind of margin in your life? And maybe you're saying, hey, you don't understand. I get out of church and I leave straight from here right to work. Can I tell you that your Sabbath doesn't have to be on Sunday? Our staff here, our Sabbath is on Monday. We take that time to rest. But can you intentionally make the decision that I am going to set apart that time? And maybe you're saying, hey, I don't have 24 hours yet. Can I challenge you to start with 12 then? And just say, I'm going to have this 12-hour block. And then once you see that you can do that, can you jump it up to 16 hours? And once you start seeing God show up in that rest and actually recharging you and rejuvenating you for what's to come, would you then take that step back to 24 hours? But will you decide to set a Sabbath apart for you, for the rest that you need, and how God saw that need in each and every one of us? And then our other next step is I'm going to reevaluate my Sabbath and see how I can stop work, enjoy rest, practice delight, and contemplate God in a more intentional way. Would you look at how you're actually Sabbathing? Those who are enjoying Sabbath rest, would you look at how you're doing it and make sure that you aren't hitting any of those off as the checklist, but that you would actually be able to experience a Sabbath in a way that is going to recharge you for the coming week. So when you get to Sunday night or whatever is the beginning of your week, that you are not dreading the week to come. But that you are ready for it, you are anxious for it, and you are just ready to go. If that's you, would you just mark that off so our team can be praying for you this week? But I want to pray for you right now, so let's pray together. Jesus, thank you so much that you care enough about us to build this margin into our lives. Thank you for how you see the heart of the matter and you don't get caught up in the legalities. You don't get caught up in the wording and the semantics of things. But that you really do want what's best for us. And so thank you for how time and time again you have met the needs of your people. But we're grateful for how you are going to continue to meet the needs of us. For how you continue to meet us each and every time that we need you. And so, Jesus, we trust you with our lives. We trust you with our Sabbath and with our rest. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.